Muted.
Okay, you can unmute yourself now, Pastor Steve.
Well, I just listened and it did not affect the music, and we can hear you breathing over the music.
Right.
And
yeah,
you
yeah.
need to mute your mic.
Okay, I need to do that. Right, okay. Well, I forgive me, I have sinned, ladies and gentlemen. I had a big bowl of spaghetti with garlic bread, and I'm paying for it today with congestion. Because yeah, that's how I get affected by wheat, modern wheat products, whether it's GMO or just the wheat itself, I don't know. But for people who've heard me on the air over the years, I've had this congestion problem, and it went away when I stopped eating wheat products. Okay, especially white bread and noodles. Okay, I just have to stay. If I eat that kind of stuff, I get all congested. Other people get diabetes. People get different symptoms from this. No, how should I put it? No nutrient, high calorie diet that's called noodles, bread, etc., etc. So just for those who might be having similar symptoms to what I've experienced, I quit eating bread. And my congestion cleared up. Okay, so you can probably tell I'm sniffling a little bit this morning. So
Yeah.
anyway, yeah, welcome.
They've weaponized the wheat.
Yes, they have.
And we
Yeah.
can't eat wheat anymore.
They're weaponizing everything and GMOing everything. Right? So,
Gmo.
yeah, all right,
Gmo.
Gmo.
Oh,
Yeah.
no, it's Gmo.
Right. Okay, so we're into, I forget what, I haven't had a chance to look up.
Josephus,
Yeah.
we're going to start in chapter 16. This is continuing story about Herod,
Yes. Yes.
and wow.
Right. Now, of course, this does not qualify as scripture, as we have been saying the Apocrypha do. The Apocrypha definitely
Now
qualify as scripture.
this is a history show.
Right. This is pure history, but it's written by a pure-blooded Judahite by the name of Josephus, Flavius Josephus. And as we pointed out on several episodes, he has to watch what he says because he was a general in the Roman army, and he could not offend the leader, the Kaiser, the Caesar. Otherwise, his head would get chopped off. So he had to posture as if Caesar was God. And he had to be careful about what he said about Yahshua Messiah, right? So this is how should I put politically correct language as much as possible. Okay. So and let me just start out by reading the heading here for chapter 16, how Herod, when he had married Mariamne was, I believe, a daughter of Hyrcanus, or at least one of the Hasmonean line, took Jerusalem with the assistance of Sosius by force, and how the government of the Hasmoneans was put an end to. Okay, the Hasmoneans are the Maccabees. The Maccabees. Apparently, their great granddaddy was named Asmoneus. And in my book, The Great Impersonation, I list all of the kings of Judah during this period so that we have the pure-blooded line, which actually died out at this point in time. So we have Hyrcanus, who was succeeded by Onias III, then succeeded by Jesus, and these were in very short order after Hyrcanus died. Jesus was also known as Jason. Mattathias, Judas Maccabeus then was the official king of the house of Judah. Alcimus, Onias IV, who fled to Egypt, as we read last time in Josephus. Then Jonathan, Simon, and then John Hyrcanus II, Aristobulus I, Alexander Janius, Alexandra, she was the queen, there was no king for a period, there was a queen, Alexandra. John Hyrcanus III, Aristobulus II, and then he was displaced, and John Hyrcanus III was back in power. Then a guy named Judah, and then Antipater and Herod the Great, they took over. So there was a real, after John Hyrcanus, there was basically trouble in paradise, and there was one leader after another, none of whom, many of whom didn't even reign for a year. So you can see the turbulence going on in the house of Judah at this time. Over to you.
There was so much backstabbing, literally backstabbing. They would kill each other left and right. And,
yeah.
You know, it's... So now we've got Herod, and this is up in the time when Christ was going to be coming,
right?
And this is the history of the predecessors, you know, and gives insight into the thought processes and mindsets of the population and rulers of the day. That's
right.
What this is for. It's a historical reference.
Wonderful. It's really wonderful how he
and
presents
it. It's an eye opener. It's not. They're not preaching the gospel, but this gives our history because we are the Israelites,
That's right.
This is what happened to our people back then. I mean, I do enough scripture shows. I preach a lot. Everybody, we all preach in here, okay? But we need to have some background information so we don't repeat the same mistakes over and over and over, which we seem to be doing today.
Oh, yeah, we sure are. Yeah.
Israel is very cucked lately. We have been assaulted by these creatures.
Descendants of Herod.
These creatures.
Right.
And we have some big trouble.
Oh, man.
Okay?
Yep.
And we're seeing it every day. Of course, the EFR audience is aware of this. But this is why. Okay? Why?
Why?
Why? But this is what's going on. So
it's difficult to watch what's going on, as I'm sure it was for all the righteous Judahites in the days of the Hasmoneans. It was difficult for them to watch what was happening then as well. Okay, but history is repeating itself, folks.
We're sort of stuck. I mean, you're darned if you do and darned if you don't. All these people that I don't want to get involved. You were born involved.
Yeah.
You're wearing your uniform. Your skin, that white skin that you were born in, brothers and sisters, sets you apart. And you are right in the middle of it, whether you want to be or not. What you want and what's happening are two different things.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And eventually our people realize that living for pleasure doesn't work.
Right.
And somewhere along the line, you have to turn to righteousness.
Before we get started, I want to let everybody know all the word-for-word shows are done. They will be repeating in series on EFR, but I now have a zip drive, one of those cruiser drives, with all of the shows on it. and it's available on my website, pastor-steve.com, under items for sale. It's $77, which was suggested by a CI brother as a holy number. What would be a good price? He said $77.
Okay. Go ahead and put the link in the chat room.
I did, I think.
Oh, you did. Okay.
Okay, I'll put it in. There it is. There it is again.
There you
okay.
go. Okay. Cruiser. Is that a Ford or a Chevy?
These are SanDisk. These are high quality. This is not junk.
C-R-U-Z-E-R. Never heard of that. Okay.
Well, that's a brand name. It's zip drive, cruiser drive, whatever you want to call them. But these are top quality pieces. It's not El Cheapos, and all of the shows, 484 shows, are on that, and you have a little space at the end for whatever you want to put on it.
Very good.
They're available on my website. All the information's on my website.
Yeah. So just for all the listeners, Pastor Steve has not been wasting his time since he got out of the joint. Right? Time well spent, Pastor Steve. Hooray!
When we're keeping on keeping on. We're doing all these shows. This is going to be a banner year, I think, for EFR.
Yes, it's had a good start.
And, I'm back to doing live wake-up call shows, the new ones. They're all new. I'm in a series right now, Back to Basics.
Right.
Series for all the people that have just got off the fence. And it's got a lot of information that I'm giving for people that have been off the fence for a while.
Yeah, so, fallen on one side or the other, right?
Right.
And we just had our first Restoration Hour live last
night. Yeah, that was cool with Doc.
Right. That was great fun. That was great. By the way, if you missed it, what Doc Waterman, that's over a year. It's been over a year since I've done a Restoration Hour show because I had to leave that network because the audio problem, their sound system and my sound system would just not gel. And we had all kinds of technical problems.
Well,
so.
You sounded good last night. Good. I listened. Excellent. It sounded great. You got to send me the file so I can put it in a repeat slots.
Right, right. Yeah, so hopefully there is a repeat slot for your Restoration Hour. It's been a year. So anyway, for those who missed the show, and I have to send it to Pastor Steve so he can put it up in the archives.
Yeah.
What Doc Waterman was saying last night, and... sit down. He said that JFK Jr. faked his own death. Yes, you heard me correctly. And he has been pulling strings behind the scenes. The Navy helped him fake his own death. And he's basically allied with QAnon and all the how should I put it, the white knights behind the scenes that are putting away the small-time anti-American, operatives, under Hillary Clinton and under Soros, etc. And it's taking them.
Yeah, they've been nailing the little guys.
The little guys. They've been nailing the little guys, but still no major nailing has taken place. Anyway, so that was a great fun show, so you might want to check that out. And maybe Google it and see if there's any more information about that. In any case, let me repeat, JFK Jr. faked his own death, and he has updated photographs, he's a little older now. And he basically is the force behind QAnon. Okay, so let's get back to Josephus. All right, so the Hasmoneans... And these were the dynasty, and of course Josephus documents the dynasty. Basically from the Greco, the Greek period under Antiochus Epiphanes, who was the guy who slaughtered the pig on the altar and caused the rebellion of Judas Maccabeus. Okay, So it was during these tumultuous times that we had various leaders, some good, some not so good, but that's the history of our people in general anyway, right? But this, but Josephus documents the utter decline of the kingdom and the dynasty to the point where the dynasty disappears and is taken over by Edomites, namely Herod. And the very brief dynasty, he had three or four sons that lived for a while. That was it. Then the Romans kicked ass. And that was that. Okay? So, paragraph one. After the wedding was over, came Sosius through Phoenicia, Sosius being a Roman, having sent out his army before him over the Midland parts. He also, who was their commander, came himself with a great number of horsemen and footmen. The king also came himself from Samaria, and brought with him no small army besides that which was there before, for they were about 30,000. And they all met together at the walls of Jerusalem and encamped at the north wall of the city, being now an army of 11 legions, armed men on foot and 6,000 horsemen with other auxiliaries out of Syria. The generals were two, Sosius sent by Antony to assist Herod, and Herod on his own account in order to take the government from Antigonus, who was declared an enemy to Rome, that he might himself be king according to the decree of the Senate. So here we see Herod, and Josephus has gone to great pains to tell us that Herod was an Edomite, not a member of the dynasty of the Hasmoneans. He was an Edomite usurper, folks. It's very plain. Now, why isn't the Judeo-Christian world teaching this? Back to you, Steve.
Well, they're being politically correct and stepping around, just like Josephus.
You got it, bro. Yeah.
They're being very careful. This is paragraph two, or section two. Now the Judeans that were enclosed within the walls of the city fought against Herod with great readiness and zeal, for the whole nation was gathered together. They also gave out many prophecies about the temple and many things agreeable to the people, as if God would deliver them out of the dangers they were in. They had also carried off what was out of the city, that they might not leave anything to afford sustenance either for men or for beasts. And by private robberies, they made the want of necessities greater. When Herod understood this, he opposed ambushes in the fittest places against their private robberies, and he sent legions of armed men to bring its provisions, and that from the remotest places, so that in a little time they had great plenty of provisions. In other words, he gutted and looted the countryside.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the three bulwarks were easily erected. Those were the siege ramps.
Right.
They made them out of earth and just piled
dead bodies, dead animals, whatever they could find.
Anything they could walk on to get to the top of the walls.
Right.
Now, the three bulwarks were easily erected because so many hands were continually at work upon it, for it was summertime and there was nothing to hinder them in raising their works, neither from the air nor from the workmen. So
no
they
rain.
Brought their siege engines to bear and shook the walls of the city and tried all manners of ways to get inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yet did not those within discover any fear, but the Judeans also contrived a number of engines to oppose their engines. They also sallied out and burned not only those engines that were not yet perfected, but those that were. And when they came hand to hand, their attempts were not less bold than those of the Romans, though they were behind them in skill.
Mm-hmm.
because they were not professional soldiers.
Right.
They were just local people.
They were militia.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They also erected new works when the former were ruined, and making mines underground, they met each other and fought them, and making use of brutish courage rather than of brute valor, they persisted in this war to the very last. And this they did while a mighty army lay around them. And while they were distressed by famine and the want of necessities, for this happened to be a sabbatic year. They were only living on what they had stored up because they were not allowed to farm during a Sabbath year.
Right. Okay. The land had to lay fallow. Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
The first that scaled the walls were 20 chosen men. The next were Sosius centurions.
They were the guys who were least liked by the entire battalion because they were sure to die, right? The first ones.
The first wall was taken in 40 days and the second in 15 more when some of the cloisters that were about the temple were burned, which Herod gave out to have been burned by Antigonus in order to expose him to the hatred of the Judeans. And when the outer court of the temple and the lower city were taken, the Judeans fled into the inner court of the temple and into the upper city. But now, fearing lest the Romans should hinder them from offering their daily sacrifice to God, they sent a delegation and desired that they would only permit them to bring in beasts for sacrifices, which Herod granted, hoping they were going to yield. Okay. But when he saw that they did nothing of what he supposed, but bitterly opposed him, in order to preserve the kingdom to Antigonus, he made an assault on the city and took it by storm. And now all parts were full of those that were killed by the rage of the Romans at the long duration of the siege and by the zeal of the Judeans that were on Herod's side. Traitors.
Yes.
Who were not willing who were not willing to leave one of their adversaries alive. Let's stop right here.
Wow.
What do you think
these
traitors that are helping the enemy would plan for those of us that are of the remnant?
They would hate us with a passion.
They would hate
even more than the Jews
hate us. Fear us. Who persecutes us more than anybody else today except the Judeo-Christians?
That's right.
So they were murdered continually in the narrow streets and in the houses by crowds, and as they were flying to the temple for shelter, and there was no pity taken of either infants or of the aged, nor did they spare so much of as the weaker sex, the women.
Although
the king sent about and begged them to spare the people, yet nobody restrained their hand from slaughter, but as if they were a company of madmen, they fell upon persons of all ages without distinction.
Does this remind us of the Civil War here in America, folks?
They will do that to us again.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be hand-to-hand fighting.
So better
and
be ready to fight.
And wonder why I have a collection of swords that I can distribute among those of us.
Brethren.
So when they get right up on us, they're ours.
Right. Oh, yeah.
A sword is still
a day is coming, folks. That day's coming. Okay.
But nobody wants to hear that. That's not pleasant. That's hateful. You gotta
that's
be
not
kind.
Loving. Defending yourself from someone. That's
loving.
Not loving. Right.
Right.
Well, we have to face reality. Back to you.
And then Antigonus, without regard to either his past or present circumstances, came down from the citadel and fell down at the feet of Sosius.
Okay.
Who took no
so that's it.
Of him, who took no pity of him in the change of his fortune, but insulted him beyond measure and called him Antigone.
Ooh.
That's a woman's name.
Okay.
Okay.
So that's like a boy named Sue?
He did not treat him as if he were a woman by letting him go at liberty, but put him into bonds and kept him in close custody.
Wow. What a humiliating end to the dynasty of Judah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why? Because there were very few righteous Judahites left at this
point.
They
apostatized, and Yahweh warned them.
Yes. Yep, yep. So, but now we see that just as in those days the Edomites took over Palestine with the help of an occupying force, namely Rome, the current occupants of Judea / Palestine today, the Jews, the Edomite Jews, did so with the help of the British occupying force, the so-called British Mandate. Okay? So in both cases, the Edomites took over with the help of an invading army because they can't do it themselves. They're horrible fighters. And as you can see here, it looks like Herod's army was mainly composed of Judahite traitors, not Edomites.
Mm-hmm. And Romans.
And Romans. Okay, so Jews are not fighters, folks. They're weak, they're sniveling, they're cowardly, everything that the devil himself is, okay? By the way, Clan Fedrin just put in the chat room, you got to take a look at this, click on that link, and it says JFK Jr.'s grave. And guess what? The gravesite is shaped like a Q. So maybe Doc Waterman is right. So there's a circular drive at the bottom of which is a tomb. And then there's a drive going over to the side where the squiggle of the Q belongs. Okay. So his gravesite is shaped just like a Q. So maybe Doc Waterman is right, that this whole thing was planned from the beginning with the faking of JFK's death. So again,
from what he said, he's really going after the ones that were involved in his father's death.
Right, right.
That's his agenda, quote,
okay.
Unquote.
Yeah.
And he's really
really
going at him.
So who would JFK Jr. be? Antigonus? Right? In these end times? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Well, that's that old Chinese curse. May you live in interesting times.
Oh, man. Way too interesting. Okay. Ooh. Paragraph 3. Oh, paragraph 3. And now Herod, having overcome his enemies, his care was to govern those foreigners who had been his assistants. For the crowd of strangers rushed to see the temple and the sacred things in the temple. Okay. The Jerusalem temple was famous far and wide. Okay. So, I'm sure that the glories of Solomon were still, talked about everywhere. So, these soldiers that had come from far off places to attack Jerusalem wanted to see the temple. What's all the stories we've heard about this temple in Jerusalem being so glorious? So they wanted to see it, okay? And the sacred things in the temple. But the king, thinking a victory to be a more severe affliction than a defeat, if any of those things which it was not lawful to see should be seen by them, used entreaties and threatenings, and even sometimes force itself to restrain them. So it's like Black Thursday, the mob wanted to get in, right?
Well, these people were foreigners.
Yeah.
They were not to enter that temple. That,
right.
That temple was a holy place, and it was restricted to certain priest class people.
Right, yeah. And Herod, I'm sure, wanted to maintain their loyalty to whatever extent he could, right?
Right.
Okay. So he had to fight off the mob from going into the temple. Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting times. He also prohibited the ravage that was made in the city and many times asked Sosius whether the Romans would empty the city both of money and men and leave him king of a desert, and told him that he esteemed dominion over the whole habitable earth as by no means an equivalent satisfaction for such a murder of his citizens. Okay, well, Mr. Herod, what do you think's going to happen when you invade a city with accompanied by an occupying force? What do you think's going to happen? Okay.
He's going to wind up being king of nothing.
Yes, that's right. And that's pretty much what it was. If it weren't for Rome being the assistant of Herod and of the Pharisees in the generation after Herod, they would have no power, none whatsoever. Okay? So, just as the Edomites today, if it weren't for the British army and the League of Nations that actually created the British Mandate, and that League of Nations withered away. Nevertheless, the British Mandate was still recognized by many countries, and that's how the Jews got a foothold in Palestine today. Very similar, okay? Military occupation, proclamations, pronouncements made by people who have no authority whatsoever, but they have the force of an army behind them. That's how the Israeli state was created.
Yep.
Okay.
That's how it's kept.
Yeah, and it was not born in a day, as the Judeo-Christians. America is the kingdom that was born in a day by signing the Declaration of Independence and breaking off of the British Empire.
And their continued existence exists only by the grace of the armed forces of the United States.
That's right. That's
we're
right.
Keeping Israel above water. If we cut off Israel,
they're done. They're done. Yes, and that's going to happen, folks. That's going to happen in any case.
Oh, I hope so. I'd love to see that.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So the Israeli state was not born in a day. It took from the Balfour Declaration to 1948 is about 30 years. It took 30 years for the Jews to finally occupy, to plan, connive, steal, murder, rape,
terrorize.
Blow up. Yeah, right. It took them 30 years of terrorism to create the Israeli state, folks. That was not born in a day like America was back. Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm reading. Okay. Where was I? And leave him a desert. Okay. And told him that he esteemed dominion over the whole habitable earth as by no means an equivalent satisfaction for such a murder of his citizens. And when he said that this plunder was justly to be permitted on the soldiers for the siege they had undergone, he replied that he would give everyone his reward out of his own money. And by this means he redeemed what remained of the city from destruction. So Sosius was determined to continue to slaughter because that's how the soldiers got paid. Right? You plunder.
And they were also very angry that they had resisted.
Yes, of course. Of course.
And they did not know that they were killing their own kinsmen.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So Herod offered him money instead, and I guess he relented. And by this means he redeemed what remained of the city from destruction. And he performed what he had promised him, for he gave a noble present to every soldier and a proportionable present to their commander. So, obviously, Herod knew where the treasure was stored, went in there, took out the money, and paid off the soldiers who ransacked Jerusalem.
That's correct.
Yeah, but a most royal present to Sosius himself, till they all went away full of money. Mercenaries.
Yep.
Mercenaries.
Well, yeah.
Yep. Oh, now wait a minute.
That was that. Well, the Roman soldiers, they were soldiers for profit.
Yeah.
They were permitted to loot. That was, and some of them retired rich.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Just like they do today. Right.
They did. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things haven't changed.
Okay. In the next paragraph, there is a footnote as part of the very first sentence. Do you have that in your book? Because I know you got a
different... Yes, Josephus fully in frequency assures us that there passed above 3 years between Herod's first obtaining the kingdom at Rome and his second obtaining it upon the taking of Jerusalem and death of Antigonus. The present history of this interval twice mentions the army going into winter quarters,
okay,
which perhaps belonged to two several winters.
Yes. Okay. That's likely. Okay. So it was a very long siege. Okay.
That's and right.
Yeah. So after 3 years or thereabouts, the soldiers would have been really tired of it, right? And then it's always at the end of a war where the most vicious killing obtains, because, you know, the built-up rage, you hear 3 years of built-up rage, resulted in a massive slaughter in the city of Jerusalem. Now, anybody that's listening to our preaching here, get ready, because that kind of rage is going to surface again. As George Washington predicted in his Valley Forge vision, he told us that America would devolve into hand-to-hand fighting in every city of America. So you better get ready.
Antifa and the organized gangs.
There you go.
Against the citizenry.
That's right. That's right. Is it happening, folks? It's happening. Back to you, Steve.
Well, this is section 4. This destruction befell the city of Jerusalem when Marcus Agrippa and Caninius Gallus were consuls of Rome. On the 185th Olympiad, on the third month, on the solemnity of the fast, as if a periodical revolution of calamities had returned since that which befell the Judeans under Pompey.
Okay, let me interrupt you here, because this is really important historical information, because we just found out that this was a sabbatical year for Judah, okay? So we can sync up the sabbatical year with this particular historical year according to Roman chronology, okay? And so we might be able to determine when the last jubilee was, okay? Because Brother Abar and I have been trying to find out, you know, when is the next jubilee, okay? So this would be very useful information. Back to you.
Okay. For the Judeans were taken by him on the same day, and this was after 27 years' time. So they were good and angry.
Yeah.
So when Sosius had dedicated a crown of gold to God, he marched away from Jerusalem and carried Antigonus with him in bonds to Antony. But Herod was afraid lest Antigonus should be kept in prison only by Antony, and when he was carried to Rome by him, he might get his cause to be heard by the Senate, and might demonstrate as he was himself of the royal blood.
Yes, he was. Very good. Thank you, Josephus. And Herod knew it.
And Herod... but a private man. Yeah. Therefore, it belonged to his sons, however, to have the kingdom on account of the family they were of.
The Hasmoneans, yes.
In which case, he had himself offended the Romans by what he had done. Out of Herod's fear of this, it was that he, by giving Antony a great deal of money, tried to persuade him to have Antigonus killed, which, if it were once done, he should be free from that fear. And thus did the government of the Asamoneans cease 126 years after it was first set up. This family was a splendid and an illustrious one, both on account of the nobility of their stock and the dignity of the high priesthood.
It's so racist for him to say that.
For the glorious actions their ancestors had performed for our nation. But these men lost the government by their dissensions one with another, and it came to Herod, the son of Antipater, who was of no more than a vulgar family.
Edomites.
And of no eminent extraction. You understand what that antique word means?
Yes.
No decent bloodline.
Mm-hmm.
He was of Edomite bloodline, not Israelite, but one that was subject to other kings.
Okay, Edomites.
And this is what history tells us was the end of the Asmonean family.
Wow, in this last paragraph alone, abundant proof that Antipater and Herod were non-Judahite Edomites descended from the house of Edom, house of Esau. Why aren't there any theologians revealing this stuff? I mean, it can't be any plainer. This last paragraph just lays it all out.
Mm-hmm.
That Herod was a non-Judahite of vulgar heritage. Okay? And Herod himself.
That's a polite way of saying he was Edomite scum.
Right?
Let's be real honest. You know, that's how they felt about him.
That's right.
Rightfully so.
Yeah.
And rightfully so today.
And that's how we feel about the Jews, folks. We have the correct attitude toward the Jews. It's the Judeo-Christians who are being befuddled by their politically correct pastors of Judeo-Christianity.
Well, why do you think Eisenhower hated the Germans so?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because Eisenhower was a Swedish Jew and his mother was part black. He had Negro blood.
Right.
He was our first Negro president. People think Barack Obama. No.
Bill Clinton.
Dwight David Eisenhower.
Right.
Look up his lineage.
Mm-hmm.
And the American people are so
dumbed down.
Lied to. They are so befuddled and lied to. And you confront them with the truth, documented facts, and they'll still deny it. They don't want their little boat rocked.
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry. We are in the boat rocking business here at DMR.
That's why we wear life preservers.
We're going to tell you the truth whether you like it or not.
That's why we wear life preservers wherever we go.
Yellow
bulletproof. Right? That's what we have to do, folks. Okay, but even bulletproof vests are susceptible to a nice sharp sword, are they not?
Especially with a tanto point.
Okay.
And then an arrow will also go through them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm into archery.
There you go. Okay. That was book 14.
Now we're going to start book 15.
Book 15.
From the death of Antigonus to the finishing of the temple by Herod.
Okay.
This is containing the interval of 18 years.
Now, every theologian would have to ask the question, why was Herod such, number one, an unrighteous person? And number two, why did he erect temples to pagan gods? Okay, that's because he was not a Judahite. Okay, he was not a Judahite. And then the other question is, why was Herod so afraid of the birth of baby Jesus? Why was he so terrified? Because he knew that when Jesus grew up to be a man, he might overthrow him, right? Because Herod was an Edomite. How much more proof does the world need that Herod was an Edomite, and everybody ignores this element of history? All right, chapter 1 Concerning Pollio and Simmias, Herod slays the principal of Antigonus's friends and spoils the city of its wealth. Antony beheads Antigonus. So here we see the last living heir to the throne of the Hasmonean dynasty. Does not mean that there isn't somebody else qualified to rule over Judah at this point. In fact, Yahshua was qualified to rule over Judah at this point, but that was not to be. So because the prophecy says Yahweh will always have a man available to rule over Judah. There will always be somebody in a competing family that is worthy of, direct descendant of David. Worthy of being on a throne somewhere. It doesn't say there always will be, but it always will be somebody worthy of the claim. Okay? As there's a guy in Australia who claims to be the true heir as opposed to Queen Elizabeth. All right? So, how Sosius and Herod took Jerusalem by force, and besides that, how they took Antigonus captive, has been related by us in the foregoing book. We will now proceed in the narration. And since Herod had now the government of all Judea put in his hands, and he proceeded to slaughter all of the family members left of the royal houses, he promoted such of the private men of the city as had been of his party, but never left off avenging and punishing every day those that had chosen to be of the party of the enemies. That means of the true Judahites. But
he killed all of the Aharonic priesthood line.
Right. Right.
So he made sure there was no legitimate person.
Right.
That could really be a high priest.
Right. And what happened? According to the New Testament, the high priest was selected by either Herod or the Romans from year to year. Okay?
Yep.
So that's proof of what you just said, that the, the male line, the heritable high priesthood was done away with and replaced by an appointee every year. And none of these were Judahites. Some of these were actually imported from Babylon, folks. From Babylon. Okay? All right. But Pollio, the Pharisee, and Simmias, a disciple of his, were honored by him above all the rest. Now, Pollio may have been a Judahite, or he may have been a half-breed. We don't know. Okay? But we know that the Pharisees now become very, very important because, why? Herod elevated one of the Pharisees under himself. Okay, so now the Pharisees become the enemies of Judah because the Pharisees emerged as a sect within Judah, okay, during the Hasmonean period. And they at least made pretensions of being righteous. But they had the habit of inventing their own laws. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
The Babylonian Talmud.
Right.
Came to the fore, and they started using that instead of the Torah.
Amen.
Oh, they would quote the Torah.
Yes, they would.
But they would
live
by the Talmud.
Exactly. Total, absolute hypocrisy. Beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, which is hypocrisy. So reading this history makes it clear, although nobody has ever written a definitive history of the Pharisees, what is absolutely clear here is, although they started as a sect within Judah, they were pure-blooded Judahites when they began, they became totally corrupted and now are part of the enemy. And more likely a
mixed... They were infiltrated.
Yes.
Remember,
absolutely.
Paul was a Pharisee.
Yeah.
And he was a pure-blooded Benjamite.
Right.
But he was at odds with the Pharisees because of their practices.
Yes. Eventually, yes.
And then eventually, he suffered the same fate. He went to Rome. He was beheaded. All the disciples.
Yes.
All of them. were killed.
Yeah.
All
yeah. Brother Abair says the Levite high priest was for life, but the Edomites played musical chairs. Yeah. Well, because they, you know, they wanted to show their dominance over Judah as the occupying force. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And every Pharisee wanted his chance, right, at being high priest. Okay. I bet they paid money. I'll bet they did.
Oh, surely not.
Yeah, right? It's not recorded in any history I've ever read, but I bet they did. Okay, all right, let's continue. Okay, where was I? Samaeus, a disciple? Okay, so basically, Pollio, the Pharisee, and Samaeus, a disciple of his, so two Pharisees, were honored by him above all the rest. For when Jerusalem was besieged, they advised the citizens to receive Herod, for which advice they were well requited, paid. Okay, they
pay
were well
for play.
Yeah, they were well paid to say this, to encourage. You know, just like Schumer and Dianne Feinstein. Right.
Pelosi.
Yeah, Pelosi, right? They're all very well-paid agents of the international Jew to advise us, right?
They're Jewish.
Yeah. But this
Pollio. They are. They're Jews.
Yeah, right. What do you expect from Jews, right? But this Pollio, at the time when Herod was once upon his trial of life and death, foretold in a way of reproach to Hyrcanus and the other judges how this Herod, whom they suffered now to escape, would afterward inflict punishment on them all. Wow. So he's the guy.
Surely
who,
not.
He's the guy who prophesied that this would happen, and guess what? It came true, which had its completion in time while God fulfilled the words he had spoken. But now this same Pollio, he didn't prophesy that he would be an agent of Herod, but that happened too. Back to you.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, wow,
man.
Wow.
Section 2. At this time, Herod, now he had got Jerusalem under his power, carried off all the royal ornaments and plundered the wealthy men of what they had gotten.
Raised taxes.
And when, by these means, he had heaped together a great quantity of silver and gold, he gave it all to Antony.
Wow.
At his friends that were about him. Big time suck up, bribing.
Oh, man. Yep.
Oh, yes. He also killed 45 of the principal men of Antigonus's party and set guards at the gates of the city, and nothing might be carried out together with their dead bodies.
Okay, see what's going to happen to us if the Jews take over 100%? Sorry to interrupt you. This is what's going to happen to our people if we allow the Jews to take total control of our nation. They're going to kill us all, just as they did then. Back to you. Sorry to interrupt.
They also searched the dead, and whatever was found, either of silver or gold or other treasure, was carried to the king or the tetrarch.
Yep.
Nor was there any end of the miseries he brought upon them. And this distress was in part occasioned by the covetousness of the prince regent, who was still in one of more, and in part by the sabbatic year, which was still going on, and forced the country to lie still uncultivated. They were since we are forbidden to sow our land in that year.
Right.
They were being obedient, at least the ones that were.
Yeah, the farmers, right? the simple people, right? They were still
right.
Being obedient. Yeah.
Now, when Antony had received Antigonus as his captive, he determined to keep him against his triumph. But when he heard that the nation grew rebellious, and that out of their hatred to Herod, they continued to bear goodwill to Antigonus, he resolved to behead him at Antioch. For otherwise, the Judeans could no way be brought to be quiet.
Mm.
And Strabo of Cappadocia attests to what I have said when he speaks thus. Antony ordered Antigonus the Judean to be brought to Antioch and there to be beheaded. And this Antony seems to me to have been the very first man who beheaded a king, as supposing he could no other way bend the minds of the Judeans so as to receive Herod, whom he had made king or tetrarch,
right,
in his stead. For by no torments could they be forced to call him king.
Right.
So great a fondness they had. So great a fondness they had for their former king.
Not my president.
So he thought that this dishonorable death would diminish the value they had for Antigonus's memory, and at the same time would diminish the hatred they bore to Herod. Thus far, Strabo.
Very good. So the word king is used properly of Antigonus because he was a pure-blooded Judahite of the Hasmonean dynasty. Right?
He was a king. But
Tetrarch.
But Herod.
Was an appointee.
He was an appointed ruler. And that's right. All he was. He had no royal blood. He had no Judahite blood. He was an Edomite.
That's right. 100% Edomite. Okay.
Deal with it.
Yeah, right. And as you said, the first Edomite king we had was Eisenhower. Although FDR had a lot of Edomite blood, too.
No. Wilson.
No? Wilson? Wolfson?
Wolfson? Yeah, Wolfson. Yeah, okay. We have had Jew presidents for a long time. Don't know about Nixon, but...
He's a Californian. All right, chapter 2, how Hyrcanus was set at liberty by the Parthians and returned to Herod. So there's one of the sons of Hyrcanus is still alive. And what Alexandra did when she heard that Anenelus was made high priest. Okay, so now we're entering, there's only a couple of people left who were pure-blooded heirs. And Alexander was one, and Hyrcanus, I believe the third, is the other. And they're just about all gone. Caucasian 78 says, the Roosevelts are Dutch Jews in slave trading. I don't doubt that at all, that they were in the slave trade. Mm-hmm. All right, paragraph 1. Now, after Herod was in possession of the kingdom, Hyrcanus, the high priest, who was taken a captive among the Parthians, came to him again and was set free from his captivity in the manner following. Okay, so he was being protected by the Parthians, this son of John Hyrcanus. Barzapharnes and Pacorus, the generals of the Parthians, took Hyrcanus, who was first made high priest and afterwards king, and Herod's brother Phasaelus, captives, and were carrying them away into Parthia. Phasaelus, indeed, could not bear the reproach of being in bonds, and thinking that death with glory was better than any life whatsoever, he became his own executioner, as I have formerly related. So this leaves Hyrcanus the third, if my numbering is correct, as the last surviving male heir of Judah. Back to you.
Okay, section 2. But when Hyrcanus was brought into Parthia, the king Phraates treated him after a very gentle manner, as having already learned of what an illustrious family he was. On which account he set him free from his bonds and gave him a habitation at Babylon, where there were Judeans in great number.
Okay.
These Judeans honored Hyrcanus as their high priest and king, as did all the Judean nation that dwelt as far as the Euphrates, which respect was very much to his satisfaction.
Well, this would be Parthia, where these are pure-blooded Judahites, okay? Pure-blooded Judahites, folks. Back to you.
But when he was informed that Herod had received the kingdom, new hopes came upon him, as having been himself still of a kind disposition toward him, and expecting that Herod would bear in mind what favor he had received from him, and when he was upon his trial, and when he was in danger that a capital sentence would be pronounced against him, he delivered him from all that danger and from all punishment. Accordingly, he talked of that matter with the Judeans that came often to him with great affection. But they tried to retain him among them and desired that he would stay with them, putting him in mind of the kind offices and honors they did him, and that those honors they paid him were not at all inferior to what they could pay to either their high priests or their kings. And what was a greater motive to determine him, they said, was this, that he could not have those dignities in Judea because of that maiming of his body, which had been inflicted on him by Antigonus.
Did he cut off his ear?
If you had anything missing or anything damaged like that, you were disqualified.
Right.
Okay, yeah. That's the law. That's the Torah. Mm-hmm. And that kings do not usually repay men for those kindnesses which they received when they were private persons, the height of their fortune making usually no small changes in them. In other words, they got a big ego.
Right. Okay, so the Judahites of Parthia were offering him kingship in exile.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's a deal he should have taken. That's a deal.
Well,
yeah.
That's why we're reading this history.
Yes. Amen. All right. Paragraph 3. Now, although they suggested these arguments to him for his own advantage, yet did Hyrcanus still desire to depart. He wanted to be king of Judea, right? Herod also wrote to him and persuaded him to desire of Phraates and the Judeans that were there, that they should not grudge him the royal authority, which he should have jointly with himself. Oh, okay. So, I think Herod is setting a trap here.
Oh, surely not.
Yeah, for that now was the proper time for himself to make him amends for the favors he did receive from him, as having been brought up by him and saved by him also, as well as for Hyrcanus's to receive it. Okay. If there's one lesson that we in Christian identity have learned very well, is if you do a favor for a Jew, he will return the favor by doing malice to you. Okay.
Yep, he'll hate you for it.
He'll hate you for it. Okay. Don't never expect to be recompensed properly by a Jew. And as he wrote thus to Hyrcanus, so did he send also Saramallas, his ambassador to Phraates, and many presents with him, and desired him in the most obliging way that he would be no hindrance to his gratitude towards his benefactor. But this zeal of Herod's did not flow from that principle, but because he had been made governor of that country without having any just claim to it, he was afraid, and that upon reasons good enough of a change in his condition, and so made what haste he could get Hyrcanus into his power, or indeed to put him quite out of the way, arconcided, which last thing he effected afterwards. So it was a trap. Okay.
Sure.
Let me invite you into my lair. All right. Oh,
coming
man.
To my parlors,
yeah, right?
Mm-hmm. Section 4. Accordingly, when Hyrcanus came, full of assurance by the permission of the king of Parthia, and at the expense of the Judeans who supplied him with money, Herod received him with all possible respect and gave him the upper palace at public meetings and set him above all the rest at feasts, and thereby deceived him.
Wow. Hyrcanus must have been a little bit slow, right? Not to suspect any of this.
He called him his father and tried by all the ways possible that he might have no suspicion of any treacherous design against him. He also did other things in order to secure his government, which yet occasioned a rebellion in his own family for being cautious how he made any illustrious person the high priest of God. He sent for an obscure priest out of Babylon.
Oh, here we go, folks. Babylonian high priests. Here it is.
He sent for an obscure priest out of Babylon whose name was Ananelus, and bestowed the high priesthood upon.
Okay. So, this is like the Jews giving us Judeo-Christian priests.
Yep.
The parallels between what has happened here and our Christian nations are astounding. Absolutely astounding.
Still going on.
And still going on. Okay. Okay, you want to read that footnote for that paragraph?
Let me turn back. I have to find it. Here we have an eminent example of Herod's worldly and profane politics, when by the abuse of his unlawful and usurped power to make whom he pleased high priest in the person of Ananelus, he occasioned such disturbances in his kingdom and in his own family as suffered him to enjoy no lasting peace or tranquility ever afterward.
Okay.
And such is frequently the effect of profane court politics about matters of religion in other ages and nations. In other words, it's going on today.
Right.
And we have no peace today.
Right. Right, and it's more proof that Herod was not a Judahite, because he went about killing all the pure-blooded Judahites and now began appointing non-Judahite high priests. Okay? Yep. This is very important history to really establish that Herod and Antipater and the Romans were an occupying force not of the same blood as the nation of Judah. Okay?
Correct.
All right? This is absolute proof here coming from Josephus that this is the case. Okay, now, enemies within his own family. Well, he married Mariamne, who is a pure-blooded Judahite woman. Okay, so Mariamne's not going to like this, and then any of her relatives are not going to like this. So Herod now has created sedition within his own family. Mm-hmm. Paragraph 5. However, Alexandra, the daughter of Hyrcanus, and wife of Alexander, the son of Aristobulus the king, who had also brought Alexander 2 children, could not bear this indignity. Now, this son was one of the great... Okay, because, you know, they're rival sons of Judahites who deserve to be high priests and want to be high priests. So this is how Herod began alienating his own family. Okay? And the daughter, Mariamne, was married to Herod and eminent for her beauty also, which proves she's not a Jew. This Alexandra was much disturbed and took this indignity offered to her son exceeding ill, that while he was alive, anyone else should be sent to have the dignity of the high priesthood conferred upon him. Accordingly, all right, hell hath no fury like a woman whose son is denied the kingship, right? Accordingly, she wrote to Cleopatra, a musician assisting her in taking care to have her letter carried, to desire her intercession with Antony in order to gain the high priesthood for her son. Wow.
Oh, boy.
Wow. So you see all the conniving behind the scenes that Herod created, right?
He's going to have to... Conniving.
Yeah, right, yeah. The wives of New York City. Back to you, brother.
All right, section 6. But as Antony was slow in granting this request, his friend Delius came into Judea upon some affairs, and when he saw Aristobulus, He stood in admiration at the tallness and handsomeness of the child, and no less at Mariamne, the king's wife, or Tetrarch's wife,
right,
and was open in his commendations of Alexandra as the mother of most beautiful children.
Okay, because why? Because they were Arians, not Jews. Back to you. Whoever heard of a beautiful Jew?
And when she came to discourse with him, he persuaded her to get pictures drawn of them both and to send them to Antony, for that when he saw them, he would deny her nothing that she should ask.
Okay, she's so beautiful, I'll do anything she wants. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Accordingly, Alexandra was elevated with these words of his and sent the pictures to Antony. Delius also talked extravagantly and said that these children seemed not derived from men, but from some god or other.
They're Israelites.
His design in doing so was to entice Antony into lewd pleasures.
Wow.
With them.
Okay.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Who was ashamed to send for the damsel as being the wife of Herod, and avoided it because of the reproaches he should have from Cleopatra on that account.
Wow. So the pleasures of the court. The pleasures of the court. Man.
But he sent in the most decent manner he could for the young man, but added this nonetheless, unless he thought it hard upon him to do so. When this letter was brought to Herod, he did not think it safe for him to send one so handsome as was Aristobulus in the prime of his life, for he was 16 years of age and of so noble a family, and particularly not to Antony, the principal man among the Romans, and one that would abuse him in his armors.
Or amours, pardon me.
And besides, one that openly indulged himself in such pleasures as his power allowed him without control. He therefore wrote back to him that if this boy should only go out of the country, all would be in a state of war and uproar, because the Judeans were in hope of a change in the government and to have another king
over. Wow. Talk about soap opera stuff, right? So Herod was afraid that Antony would have a homosexual love affair with Aristobulus and thereby lose power. Right? Man, this is what, the days of our lives? Right? Wow.
This is some sick stuff here.
It sure is.
These people just had no morals at all.
The intrigues.
Just whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you let Jews run your country. Okay. Paragraph 7. When Herod had thus excused himself to Antony, he resolved that he would not entirely permit the child of Alexander to be treated dishonorably. But his wife, Mariamne, lay vehemently at him to restore the high priesthood to her brother, and he judged it was for this advantage so to do, because if he once had that dignity, he could not go out of the country. Okay, so he resolved, okay, I'll give it to him, and he'll stay here, all right? And he won't be the homosexual lover of Antony. So he called all his friends together, and Jewish advisors, right? And told them that Alexander privately conspired against his royal authority and endeavored by the means of Cleopatra so to bring it about that he might be deprived of the government, and that by Antony's means, this youth might have the management of public affairs in his stead. So there's a huge plot to dethrone him. And that this procedure of hers was unjust, since she would at the same time deprive her daughter of the dignity she now had, and would bring disturbances upon the kingdom, for which he had taken a great deal of pains. Yeah, how many people has he murdered already? And had gotten it with extraordinary hazards. That yet, while he well remembered her wicked practices, he would not leave off doing what was right himself, surely. but would even now give the youth the high priesthood. Oh, he's such a kind and generous Edomite. And that he formally set up an Anenelus because Aristobulus was then so very young a child. Okay. Now, when he had said this, not at random, but as he thought the best discretion he had, in order to deceive the women and those friends whom he had taken to consult with all, in other words, giving excuses, Alexandra, out of the great joy she had at this unexpected promise, and out of fear from the suspicions she lay under, fell a-weeping, and made the following apology for herself, and said that as to the high priesthood, she was very much concerned for the disgrace her son was under, and so did her utmost endeavors to procure it for him, but that as to the kingdom she had made no attempts, and that if it were offered to her for her son, she would not accept it, and that now she would be satisfied with her son's dignity while he himself held the civil government, that is, Herod would still hold the civil government, and she had thereby the security that arose from this peculiar ability in governing, yeah, by force and terror, to all the remainder of her family, that she was now overcome by his benefits, thank you, and thankfully accepted this honor shown by him to her son, and that she would hereafter be entirely obedient. Sure she would. And she desired him to excuse her, please let me live, if the nobility of her family and that freedom of acting which she thought had allowed her had made her to act too precipitately and imprudently in this manner. So, when they had been spoken thus to one another, they came to an agreement, and all suspicions, so far as appeared, were vanished away.
So far as appeared.
Yeah, so underline those words. So, okay, so you see the intrigues going on in the court when you allow an Edomite to intermarry with the family of Judah. What do you expect, folks? So what do you expect when Roosevelt the Jew and the Delanos were 100% Jews? Okay, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was a Jew.
Rosenfeld.
Rosenfeld, right. So what do you expect would happen to America when an Edomite like Rosenfeld takes over? Okay. And if you're correct about Wolfson, he was no saint either. He did as much evil as Roosevelt, and LBJ, also a Jew. Well,
remember Theodore Roosevelt, same family.
Right. Although he was not a Delano, so he may have less Jewish.
What happened there? We were in war. He was the big hero down there at San Juan Hill.
Right.
In Cuba.
And he cooperated with the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers in establishing the Bull Moose Party, thus depriving the Republicans of a real patriotic, an America, of a patriotic president.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I forget who the... Taft, I believe it was.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Bob Taft.
Taft would have been president instead of Wolfson. Okay.
Right.
All right. Chapter 3, over to you.
Okay. How Herod, upon his making Aristobulus high priest, took care that he should be murdered in a little time.
Not high priest for long, right?
Okay.
Man, this would make such a fantastic soap opera, right? Backstabbing everywhere you turn.
I'm just wondering if Hillary isn't of the same bloodline.
Yeah, there you go.
And, well...
She's got Jew blood. She grew up speaking Hebrew.
And what apology he made to Anthony about Aristobulus, as also concerning Joseph and Mariamne. Section 1. So, King Herod immediately took the high priesthood away from Anonymous.
Oh, man. Didn't last long, did it?
As said before, was not of this country, but one of those Judeans that had been carried away captive beyond the Euphrates. For there were not a few 10,000s of this people that had been carried captives and dwelt about Babylonia. Thus, Ananelus came. He was one of the stock of the high priest and had been of old a particular friend of Herod. And when he was first made king or tetrarch, he conferred that dignity upon him and now put him out of it again in order to quiet the troubles in his family, though what he did was plainly unlawful. For at no other time of old was anyone that had once been in that dignity deprived of it.
Right. It was Antiochus,
Epiphanes who first broke that law and deprived Jesus and made his brother Onias high priest in his stead. Aristobulus was the second that did so and took that dignity from his brother Hyrcanus, and this Herod was the third who took that high office away from Ananelus and gave it to this young man Aristobulus in his stead.
But even appointing Ananelus was unlawful. Okay.
Well,
so yeah. All right. So this shows what happens to our people whenever we mix, whenever we allow non-Israelites to mix with us and then ultimately rule over us. What is it? Deuteronomy 17:15. Never allow someone who is not of your bloodline to become ruler over you. It says it in plain Hebrew, folks. Okay? This is what happens when we allow non-Israelites to rule over us.
That's correct.
Yes. Okay, paragraph 2. How much time? We have about 8 minutes left.
That's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. I think I can do it. And now Herod seemed to have healed the divisions in his family. Yet was he not without suspicion, as is frequently the case of people seeming to be reconciled to one another, but thought that as Alexander had already made attempts attending to innovations, so did he fear that she would go on therein, if she found a fit opportunity for so doing. So now Herod is consumed with suspicion for the rest of his life, like a worm eating at his Jew brain. He's full of suspicions. So he gave a command that she should dwell in the palace and meddle with no public affairs. So, in other words, she was under house arrest. Her guards also were so careful that nothing she did in private life every day was concealed. All these hardships put her out of patience. By little and little, she began to hate Herod. Wow, she didn't hate him already? For as she had the pride of a woman to the utmost degree, she had great indignation at this suspicious guard that was about her, and desirous rather to undergo anything that could befall her than to be deprived of her liberty of speech, and under the notion of an honorary guard to live in a state of slavery and terror. Just like the rivalry between Mary and Elizabeth. She therefore sent to Cleopatra, again, now this is a mistake, all right, it almost caused her death once already. She therefore sent to Cleopatra and made a long complaint of the circumstances she was in and entreated her to do her utmost for her assistance. Cleopatra hereupon advised her to take her son with her and come away immediately to her in Egypt. Okay, very interesting, folks. Nowhere in secular history other than Josephus are we made aware of Cleopatra's interest in the dealings of Judah, the nation of Judea, to the extent that the Judahite wife of Herod was a friend of Cleopatra and intimately associated with her. You know, this is a... Who'd have thunk it, right? If Josephus hadn't related this, we would know nothing about it.
Well, who was this boy's father?
Alexandra's son?
Yeah.
I believe he was a pure-blood of Judah. He's not Mary Amni's son, so he would have been a pure-blood of Judahite. Aristobulus, I believe, is his name.
Okay.
Yeah, he was of the Hasmonean dynasty, but he never ruled. Okay.
Okay.
This advice pleased her, and she had this contrivance for getting away. She got two coffins made. She should have rolled herself up in a carpet, like Cleopatra did, as if they were to carry away two dead bodies, and put herself into one and her son into the other, and gave orders to such of her servants as knew of her intentions to carry them away in the nighttime. Now their road was to be thence to the seaside, and there was a ship ready to carry them into Egypt. Now Aesop, one of her servants, happened to fall upon Sabion, one of her friends, and spake of this matter to him, as thinking he had known of it before. When Sabion knew this, who had formerly been an enemy of Herod, and had been esteemed one of those that laid snares for and gave poison to his father Antipater, he expected that this discovery would change Herod's hatred into kindness. Okay, I'm not sure if Herod... Oh, okay. So, in other words, he snitched on Mary Amni in order to gain favor with Herod.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What happens when you do a favor to a Jew, Pastor Steve?
They turn and rend you.
There you go.
Like,
so he
like the swine. You
that's right. That's right. Okay. So he told the king of his this private stratagem of Alexandra. Whereupon he suffered her to proceed to the execution of her project and caught her in the very fact. But still he passed by her offense. So he gave her, apparently, forgave her. And though he had a great mind to do it, he durst not inflict anything that was severe upon her, for he knew that Cleopatra would not bear that he should have her accused on account of her hatred to him, but made a show as if it were rather the generosity of his soul and his great moderation that made him forgive them. Okay, so here we see. Jews, this is why Jews make such good actors.
There you go.
Right?
Right.
However, he fully proposed to himself to put this young man out of the way by one means or another. That's what you get for trying to help a Jew. But he had thought he might in all probability be better off concealed in doing it if he did not presently nor immediately after what had lately happened. Okay?
We're going to have to stop here,
yes.
Eli.
Yes.
We're done.
Yeah.
So we'll pick up with section 3 of chapter 3 next week.
So I love how Josephus is telling us about people who try to do favors to Jews and get punished for it.
Well, do you know what happens?
Do you know what happens? Right.
Yes.
Folks, if ever Christian identity were being verified by secular history, this is it. This is totally it. Thank you, Josephus, the pure-blooded Judahite of both priestly and royal blood, for writing this, you know, this chronicle. Huge, huge chronicle. We're only dealing with a couple of the small books of antiquities. He also wrote another book called Wars of the Judahites, or Wars of the Judeans. Either title is preferable to Wars of the Jews, or Antiquities of the Jews, because it's essentially a history of Judah, okay? But also incorporates the era of Judea, when Judah was infiltrated by Edomites, by Idumeans, okay? Hence we have the compound word Judea, a compound of Judah and Idumea. Up until that time, under John Hyrcanus, there was no union of Edomites and Judahites. Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. Hope you enjoyed this show. We'll read note 4 later. I don't have time for it, Israelite one. Thank you, take care, and Yahweh bless.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh. Aha. Uh-huh. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. I figured out how to get rid of all the noise.
Has it stopped transmitting?
Yes.